With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, we are doing a few updates here with our alumni who we love dearly. And we hope all of you guys are staying healthy, safe, and staying at home during this quarantine. And hope you enjoy listening to a few of our previous guests telling you what's been going on in their life since they did their interview. Here are some updates for the quarantine versions of And the Writer Is.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to need you to give it up one time for the illustrious, the one and only, Mr. Ross. Mr. Ross Damn Golan.
Yeah!
We got him! I can hear you.
I don't know why I did that sound.
I like that sound.
That was a weird sound to make.
Yeah, boy. How you doing, Ross?
Yeah. Hey.
How's everything going?
You know, it's that thing where I heard you asking people from 0 to 10, yeah. And I feel like we're inundated with numbers right now.
That's true.
There's a podcast that I listen to a lot called Radiolab.
Oh, I love Radiolab.
And great podcast. But this episode I just listened to, it's a couple weeks old, but it was sort of about numbers and how we constantly are listening to all these numbers and which numbers are we supposed to pay attention to.
Right.
You know, are we supposed to listen to, you know, the amount of people who got sick? Are we the people who died, the people who recovered?
Right.
You know, all these different things. There was something really interesting about this guy was talking about exponential numbers, and you hear about things that are exponential. And he said that there's a great question, which is, if I were to say to you, like, hey, if, you know, Ricky Reed, I'll pay you $1 million today to mow my lawn every single day this month, or I'll give you a penny today, 2 pennies tomorrow, 4 pennies the third day, you know, for the rest of the month.
Right.
You know, an exponential growth. Which one would you take?
I know it's the second one.
Of course it's the second one.
Right.
The second one, by the end of the month, you end up with $20 million.
Wow.
So that's how exponential growth is. And the, you know, right. The guy used the example. I'm so off topic. I'm so sorry. But this is just interesting to me.
People want to know about songwriting math, bro. How do you exponentially make the chorus pop?
Yes!
Do you want your chorus to pop like 1 million pops or fucking 20 million pops? You start the verse with one penny.
If you have 30 choruses and you add one instrument for the first chorus to the next one, then you have a Lizzo record.
That's an insult. Are you trying to say I have 20 million sounds in each chorus, Ross?
No, of course not. So, anyway, one thing that was interesting about flattening the curve that's fascinating is this.
Okay.
If you want to think about exponential growth and you're a musician, think about feedback.
Yes. That
what it is, you know, you start at 20 hertz and you double and you double and you double and you double and you double. And that's how you get that. If your mic is really close to the speaker, that's how you're going to get something terribly loud. And it's going to be impossible to even comprehend how fast that curve goes.
Right, right.
But if you do it, if you pull the mic further and further back, you can use fewer octaves. And that's literally flattening the audio curve.
Yeah, it's true.
So it's a way to audibly think of what flattening the curve is. I think that's fascinating. So that's
I think no, you're exactly right. It's also a metaphor for, I think we've flattened the curve. I thought we had flattened the curve for technical problems on this show, but I was wrong. I was wrong.
Well, here, I know you've got a long show. So listen, okay. Live from Nice Live.
Hey.
We are doing the Ricky Reed and the Writer Is update.
Yes, yes, welcome. And we have our people in the chat checking it out, watching us. We're going
to
wrap
up. Oh, yeah, you're going to have to read me questions if there's stuff that you want to respond to. But there were a couple things that I wanted to talk about. You know, you're the very first interview that we ever had. We've talked about that before. I was nervous when we did it.
I was nervous too.
It was before you got nominated for Producer of the Year the first time.
Mm-hmm.
It was only 4 years ago, by the way. So it's not like, like I said before, it sounds like I just made it up when I said, hey, can I mention how many times you've been nominated for Producer of the Year? It sounds nuts.
I also had no children 4 years ago. I mean,
oh my God,
very different time.
And now you've got 9.
And now I have 9 children. Again, you start with a penny, you have 9 children.
That's what I'm saying. You know, we can talk about a lot of things, but I think while we're on Nice Live, I think it's important to really talk about what Nice Life is, because I feel like all of it revolves around what Nice Life is. And Nice Life is a lot of things. It's not just a publishing company. It's not just a record company. You know, it's not an incubator for talent. You know, it's not just a scout for talent.
Right.
You know, I feel like you guys are a lot of things. So,
I mean,
explain what Nice Life is to people who just follow you.
You know, I should have done this a long time ago on this show, because I just talk about it casually and kind of assume people know what it is, but I'm sure people don't really know what it is. So to everyone listening, I think this is actually really helpful. So Nice Life is a record company. You know, we sign artists, we put out their records. It's kind of what you'd expect. A publishing company, if you don't know, is something where you sign songwriters, often songwriters who are also producers. Help them develop themselves, develop their sound, you know, of course, get cuts or whatever, but even try to help them develop finding their own new talent, and building their own kingdoms. That's something we like to say. You know, but the thing about Nice Life is that, like the person who we're named after, Steve Brodsky, my late manager, we're kind of don't really consider ourselves so much part of the scene of the record industry. Like, you know, Ross used the words scout and incubator and things like that. You know, we always wanted to be, you know, a family, a community, an idea, a movement, more of that kind of thing. And even though the whole record label itself sort of fell into my lap, as a partnership with Atlantic when I was having some success with them, with their label, you know, we've gotten to the point now where we're actually developing a real family and community, of course, with Lizzo, who we'll talk about. But, you know, 2 of our artists are roommates, which is insane. you know, 2 of our other artists are producing each other. Like, they all show
up.
Can you
say who these people are?
What's that?
Can you tell us who these people are?
I don't know if I can say which ones are the roommates. I feel like that's putting too much.
Okay.
But like,
especially in a quarantine way, they'll just get,
yeah,
you know.
Exactly.
Too many people in one target.
right. But then also, yeah, you have like Nate Mercero, who's a brilliant producer and musician who I collaborate with a lot. We helped him get his label House O Records off the ground. You know, put him together with St. Panther, who's a new artist now that we're doing together, but she also has worked with Junior Mesa, and Junior Mesa has worked with John Robert, and there's just this whole thing bubbling, and that's that's what our dream kind of always was. So it's really exciting to see that coming together now.
Yeah, it's awesome, man.
Thanks.
You know, speaking of the success that you had with Atlantic and some of the things that happened, not just with them, but, you know, 21 pilots was since then. That's Atlantic. Yeah. You know, you did stuff on Greatest Showman. That's Atlantic. You know, since then you had, what was that?
Oh, I just said Iconopop. That was in that same sort of era.
Sure. You know, even just the idea of having outside of them, but Halsey, Leon Bridges, The Weeknd, you know, working on all those projects are so different from each other. Mm. And when a lot of producers get pigeonholed, and I believe we talked about this the first time, how do you avoid getting pigeonholed? Why is it, you know, I would assume everyone comes to you and says, give me the next 21 pilots, and you're like, sure, I'll go work on Leon Bridges. And they're like, give me the next Leon Bridges. And you're like, yeah, that's fine, I'll go work on the Game of Thrones soundtrack. Like, none of these things make sense with each other. Why do you not get pigeonholed like everybody else seems to?
I mean, I have a short attention span. I sort of let my, you know, I let my interests guide me. And, like most people that like a bunch of different TV shows or even listen to different, artists, I get bored, kind of doing the same thing over and over. It was evident early on when I had my first success with Derulo and Talk Dirty. And for a second, I was just like, okay, got to chase this down. Like, got to keep going. I have a hit. Oh, my God. I have a hit. Like, oh, my fucking God. So chased it down for a minute and made a few more records in that style. But it quickly became obvious. People were coming to me, like, asking for the sax hook, asking for the trumpet drop and shit, you know. So 21 Pilots was the first really intentional pivot, which I give a lot of credit to my manager, Larry Wade. He sort of hunkered down with me and he was like, you know, man, we gotta, like, we were both feeling that. But since then, it's actually become a little easier just by letting it be my taste just guiding me. Oh, I like this. Oh, I like that. Like, do you want to meet Bomba Estéreo, this Colombian band? Oh, yeah, I think I heard them on KCRW. Yeah, I'll meet them. Oh, they're cool. Want to go to Colombia? Yeah. And just sort of letting it be as simple as that.
Yeah, but that's largely what it's been. It's rarely that simple when, you know, those artists that you're talking about, a lot of them, the floor is really low, you know? When you're working with... When for sure you could get in with people where you know they're going to move a certain number of units.
Right.
You end up working with 21 Pilots who has nothing, but when you're, not nothing, they had a successful album, but like it hadn't crossed over yet.
Right, right.
You know, they weren't a household name, you know, certainly Lizzo wasn't when you met Lizzo, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I started realizing that there were projects that I was taking, and everyone can relate to this. There's projects I was taking that, you know, the kind of like artist that if you are at Thanksgiving dinner, you know, and like your aunt asks you about music or movies or something, there's some shit like you're like, okay, my auntie's just not going to know what I'm talking about. So you'll say like, oh, it's kind of like, it's like Katy Perry or something. And they'll go, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. You know, I realized that there was projects I was taking that were those kind of artists. Like, I can go home at Thanksgiving and talk about this artist and everybody will know who it is. And it's not as fun to go home at Thanksgiving and be like, I'm working on the next developing thing, but trust me, it's going to be sick. And everyone goes, you know. But you realize after a while that like there's nothing better than breaking artists. And I tell this to like up and coming producers and writers all the time. They're like, how do I get my song to Sam Smith or how do I get my song to Taylor Swift? I'm like, first of all, they're not taking outside songs. Second of all, look around, and if there's anybody brilliant around you, produce them, lock in with them, and be their day one, because all the stars have a day one. So find out who's going to be yours and go there now. That's, I say that as often as I can.
Do you feel pressure?
Yes.
From
all
whom?
The time.
Who do you feel it from?
Myself.
What do you expect from yourself?
Too much. Way too much.
Is it more pressure because of the success you've had than in the beginning when you wanted success? Like, is the pressure heavier now? Or is it just different?
It's different, but it's still there. Having kids changed the flavor of the pressure to actually be something that I like a lot more.
But interesting.
I think the sort of ugliest version of the pressure I put on myself was since having success, but before having kids.
Mm-hmm.
That was, for me, the time when I was just busting my ass and beating myself up and, like, neglecting the people around me because I was just chasing down, like, pushing it and pushing it. And, of course, like, look, like most of us, I had been working for 16 years with no success. So you finally can pay your bills and you're like, dude, I got to keep this going. Of course, right? But there's a point when you really are okay, you're secure, and then you're just grinding for, like, what? And grinding to disconnect or to ignore things in your life, like all kinds of things like that. So I'll say now I do still put a lot of pressure on myself. I do still work myself too much, but I'll say that now it's not with doing things like trying to have the next hit. It's just saying yes to too much stuff that I really love.
Right, exactly. It's like an embarrassment of riches on some level, and it's hard to say no when the opportunities are... You can still say no to 90% of the things, and that 10% is still overwhelming when you're having the success you're having. You know, it's interesting. Do you get FOMO when you're seemingly the center of a lot of, you know, in a year where you have what you had, and we'll go into it next,
mm-hmm.
where your artist has, I believe, 8 Grammy nominations plus maybe more, but I think 8 Grammy nominations. You're nominated for Producer of the Year again. You worked on all kinds of amazing projects, but in a year like that, do you still get FOMO?
You know, that I wrestled with it a little bit, but it was sort of the first time that I got to take my foot off the gas. I mean, Cause I Love You, the album, came out 4 days after my twin baby boys were born. So it's very hard to locate in my head what was sort of driving, what's driving what, you know what I mean? But I will say, that was the kind of success that allowed me to sort of quieted, like, my fears, my, like, existential fears about being relevant or being on or not. It was really, like, it was validating, you know, and it, my creativity after that success felt so much stronger, so much wilder and freer, because I was like, I just felt kind of like, okay, yeah, like I'm good for a minute. So once I got through my paternity leave and everything, and kind of got back into it, I felt fresher and more excited and just electrified. That's sort of the quiet gift that I haven't talked about that much since the release of 'Cause I Love You and Lizzo's success was the relaxing of the fear and the sort of vibrance of my creativity in the wake of it. It's awesome.
You mentioned paternity leave, which is not something that's often discussed in the music industry because it's filled with independent contractors who don't take their mental health and their personal time seriously. How long was your paternity leave for? And before you answer that, I'd like to note that when people feel like taking time off is going to be a detriment to the hustle, mm-hmm. they're making a big mistake. And I'm speaking to myself and speaking to you and speaking to everyone we know that has some workaholism in there.
Yes.
That when you take that time off, you can tell that nobody's going to look at Ricky Reed's 2019 year and think that you missed out by taking time off to be a good father. So kudos to you for leading the way, but I'll let you answer the earlier question.
Yeah, well, I took about two solid months off. And my sort of tiptoeing back in was really, really fun. You know, I talked to my manager, Larry, who I mentioned earlier, and I was like, let me just sort of inch back in by just kind of saying yes to people that I'm texting with. You want to come through? Yeah. Like, we're doing this thing. Cool. And leaving it really unscheduled. And I would say probably three and a half months in, I'm back on a full schedule. But the full schedule, you know, when you have that makeup at home, you know, twin babies and a toddler, the full schedule is a 4-day week or often a 3-day week. And to get to what you said about the mistake of time off, one of our mutual friends, a guy who runs Big Deal Music Group, a guy named Kenny McPherson, he was the one, I think it was actually at a Lizzo show. Fiddler show. He pulled me aside and was like, got real close. You know, we're at a show, got real close, and he says, you know, you don't need to worry. You've spent all this time, you've spent all these years building and building friendships, relationships, a community. And this, I'm not just talking about me, like to everyone listening, like you have your circle, you have your friends, your collaborators, the people who love you, the people who love your work. He's like, those people aren't gonna just go away. Furthermore, you've been working for a moment like this. Like, you've been working for precisely this moment where you can give yourself that, and they're all going to be there for you when you get back. Dude, I relayed that story to my therapist. I know it's very LA to have a therapist, but it's very helpful. She's fabulous. But I talked her through this, told her that story. Oh my God, I sobbed. I did not see it coming, but something about thinking about all the people that I love, all my friendships, all my relationships, this community that's so great that Ross, you and I are both a part of, thinking about all those people like being there for me and how it was okay. I think the last line he said was something along the lines of like, let them care for you, like let them hold you or something. And I was like, it fucked me up, man. I haven't cried on the stream yet, but it's coming. It's coming soon.
Yeah. We'll get there. You have very loyal collaborators, writers and artists. Mm-hmm. I imagine they were encouraging about you taking the time off. But even when having an artist release an album and then you take the time off, did you find it difficult at all in an industry where everyone wants you to be available at all times?
Right.
Were they all okay adjusting to that new normal for a minute?
Yeah, I think it's who you surround yourself with, you know, and I talk about artists that I work with, writers, producers, people on the business side, and how you want to surround yourself with people who aren't just talented, but are who like are kind and loving and everything. And, you know, I'm lucky now to have a group of people around me who are all, they know if I'm like, I'm out for a minute, I got to take care of myself. They're all right there with me. And, you know, I would say to people like listening, all the folks in the chat, if you feel like you need to do something for yourself, you need a minute, you need a breather, and there's someone around you who's not respecting that, and they can be subtle about it. They may say, they don't have to just say like, yo, fuck your mental health, bro. Fuck your mental health, bro. They don't have to say that, but they might say like, oh, I thought you were going to come through. Oh, like you, we're supposed to, oh man, you're not like working the way you used to, or like you're, you know, like you've changed, that kind of stuff. If there's people like that around you who are not attuned to your interests, the way to your, you know, your health, the way you should be, the way you want to be, like, I say cut them. Not physically, literally. No, I mean, yeah. Just cut them out of your life.
This is what's shown in court. When it was like, but Ricky B told me. Songwriters are so litigious that what's going to happen is some songwriter is going to cut some guy because he's like,
Right.
So dark and so strange. Lizzo.
Okay.
You know, it's so rare to be around somebody when they take off from nothing to, you know, the top.
Right.
You know, we've been fortunate where we've seen it usually from peripherally. Maybe we had a song on the album. Maybe we got to work in a camp for them. But to be part of the label, you had to be there from the, I think this woman is talented, through the 4 years of releasing music and nobody paying attention.
Right.
To trying to get sessions with big writers, asking for favors, even though they weren't favors long. Mm-hmm. You know, how much do you feel like the next steps in your career are no longer about you and they're about artists like Lizzo?
Oh, I mean, yes. Yes, yes. 200% yes. You know, we're in a world now where the power of the artist, like the appeal of the artist, I mean, the artists have always been, from the outside, you know, what everyone sees as the thing, but there was also like a lot of, you know, super powerful producers and writers and things behind the scenes that could really call the shots. And, you know, now more than ever, what I really learned with Lizzo, and what I also wasn't even anticipating working with her, like, when you see an artist that you're working with sell out their first, like, 1,000-cap room, and all these people going crazy or crying
you know, and then you see him sell out a 2,500 cap room, and you're watching the way they're touching people, like culturally, emotionally. That I didn't even know that was coming, because I had seen artists like perform my songs before, and it was fine. But watching her get to the level that she was at, the satisfaction, like the all of a sudden it's like, oh, this is actually why I got into music, was to help amplify the voices of people like her and bring the joy that she brought me when she first walked into a room, like to help her bring that joy to like millions of people. Like, that's actually it. It's not because like just because I have like a soft spot for pop music and I'm a nerd for production. It is like, and I didn't see it coming, but it turns out that's what I discovered working with her. It's crazy.
Yeah, you know, I was going to say my last question was going to be about what makes you happy. I think you kind of nailed that, certainly outside, you know, in career-wise. You know, one anecdotal thing before I make up a last question. You know, when, obviously we did an update with you about The Wrong Man where you were the guest host.
Right.
And since then, we've done... you know, the show ran off Broadway, had a very successful run. We just got nominated for a few awards. Mm-hmm. But one of the highlights of the Wrong Man experience to start was that when you got nominated for Producer of the Year, it was an honor to have it say Ross Golan, The Wrong Man, as one of the songs that you produced throughout the year and one of the projects. Mm-hmm. It meant so much on many levels. One, to share that with you in some small piece.
Yeah.
You know, you have options to write with a lot of things. I forget that I am that I'm an artist too. Sometimes I'm always so used to doing what we do, which is, you know, you go to the studio, you write songs, you do interesting right. stuff. But that was one of the first times where I saw my name as an artist, and not, it wasn't under The Wrong Man, it wasn't under the show. Right. It listed me as an artist, and that meant a ton to me. So, you know, I have to say thank you for that, because that's like, even though it's a sliver of it, that was a really cool experience for me. So
that's amazing.
Really appreciate that.
Cheers, dude. Are you drinking cheers. Water out of a coffee cup or no?
Oh, I mean,
what do you got?
I can't drink straight from this, right? That's you against can. The rules.
Oh, there, no. What? We no rules, all heart. That's part of the slogan, bro. All
right. Well, then here, cheers.
Cheers.
One of the finest.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
I have an idea.
Yeah.
For your last question?
Yeah, sure.
Instead of your last question.
Oh, great.
I want to open it up to the people in the chat. I want to do two questions from the chat. Because when I fucking gorilla FaceTimed you the other day, mm-hmm. people couldn't hear you. They couldn't see you, but they were really excited. So if there's anybody in the chat, there's always a little bit of a lag here, but let us know if you have questions for Ross. Ross, I'm going to have another sip of my drink while I wait to see what people have.
And just a reminder for the And The Writer Is listeners who are going to be hearing this, follow Ricky Reed, follow Nice Life.
Hey.
And make sure that you watch Nice Life.
That's it.
Follow the Nice Life artists, writers, and have fun. Because every night's a party. Every night's a party.
Come on, Ross, show them.
It's only like you make really the big bucks. See the love.
Okay. We got questions coming in.
All right.
Let's see. Oh my goodness, Ross, the first question is mental. I'm gonna hit you with it because I think you are someone who can handle a question like this.
Okay.
Will Moore says, Ross, do you feel that your career is as valid in a pandemic as it was before?
Is it valid?
Maybe you could switch the word valid for something else. I would be eager to answer this question because this is a really good one.
Yeah, you know, I think it's our obligation to help people maybe get out of this. There's been a great meme that's been going around, which is if you didn't understand the value of actors and singers and songwriters and screenwriters in a time where people can only be entertained by the work that we've done our whole lives up until now. You know, you better play music yourself, but if you're playing music yourself and you're playing somebody else's song, that's a songwriter. You're playing vinyl, you're streaming this, you're streaming that, you're playing board games that were designed by some other artist in that way. It's all been art. This is an opportunity. When you're entertained, you're entertained by people who create that entertainment.
Right.
And I think you could argue that there's never been a more valuable time for what our industry does.
Right.
Than in a pandemic when people can't leave their homes. That said, I think it's also our obligation to take care of our fellow writers and artists who are struggling and who will struggle, mm-hmm. especially, you know, our older brothers and sisters who are 60, 70, 80 years old and paved the way for us. I think we owe them, and that's why we've taken all of our updates so far, and we've decided not to get sponsors and to remind people that they can donate to Music Cares. Because now's an opportunity to not just give back with art, but to give back with your wallet if you're so fortunate to do that. So, yeah,
awesome.
I think we're not just valid now. I think we'll be more valid as we need more entertainment.
Wow.
So hopefully that was fine.
Ross, people in the chat are loving it. Also, Will Morris, the person who asked the question, said, all right, you read that way harsher than I meant it. Ha ha. He says your answer was phenomenal.
Thanks. I genuinely didn't think it was harsh. I think it's important to discuss the value of what we do.
I agree.
That's what we've been fighting for the Music Modernization Act. You know, a lot of people don't think of music as having worth because you can't see sound waves.
Yep.
But you see right now when people are dancing to TikTok to songs that we wrote 5 years ago, or songs we wrote yesterday, and you see the value very quickly.
I love it. Okay, so we have, Jason Beattie's in the chat. What's up, buddy? So we have a question. We're going to switch it up. This is our last question for Ross. Dustin Bath. I started reading your name, but your icon was in purple, and I wanted to read a different person's in purple. So we'll do both. Two more questions, Ross. Dustin Bath says, what do you do when you are not inspired or have writer's block?
I mean, there's a famous quote, right? The, essentially amateurs need inspiration. You know, if you're pro, you just make it. You know, I mean, I don't know that. You know, you just write through it.
Right. So that...
You know, you make up, but look around you right now. All of you are staring at this, the most incredible tool. You have a computer, right? You know, go on Wikipedia, hit random article, and tell me that you're not going to be inspired in the first 10 articles you read. There's going to be something about some person who did something spectacular. You're going to read about it and write a song about their life. Not every song has to be written for the intent of it being a hit. You could write a song about a person. You could write a song about a situation. You can write about, if you don't know who the listener is, that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, If you don't know the artist is going to cut it, that's fine. You can write a song about anything, but just write the song. And if it sucks, that's fine.
Yep.
You might be surprised. It might be great.
Might be damn great. I love that. And then last question from So Freddy. Any advice on writing second verses? I kind of like this one for some reason.
I've said before that I think my my tombstone would read, working on the second verse shouldn't take long. Because I don't think that there's a text that I said more than that.
Oh my God. The last line of the second verse is always a,
Now let me just say, I'll say two things. Often your first verse is probably your second verse.
Yeah.
You know, like, there's a way to probably better set up your song than you think. Often. I think a lot of times people just start singing the song on the first verse, but they could probably beat that.
Right.
So sometimes the first verse is really the second verse. The other thing is, it depends if you're writing a, you know, what kind of genre you're writing. Are you telling a story from front to finish? Mm-hmm. Is it a song about beginning, middle, and end? Is your second verse the middle? Or is it all about the first and second verse? Are they really about the same thing said differently?
Right.
You know? Right. So depending on what your song is about, you can probably get through a second verse just by not giving up and you know, having another sip of wine. Because it's, for some reason, I don't know how many times the second verse is the thing that sold the song.
Yeah.
So,
okay. My,
don't worry about it.
I got two answers also. One, if your second verse is the same as the first verse, I'm going to be bored. Second half of the second verse is always an opportunity. Always an opportunity to switch it up, like new melody, something shocking. Second half of the second verse, I love. Also, you're having trouble with the second verse? Fucking don't have a second verse. Start with the hook. Do hook, verse, hook, bridge, hook. That's great. That's a great way to get around a second verse, if your hook is good and it sounds good.
You know the song Bad Day? And you had a bad day. You know that song? Ain't about it. There's no second verse.
There it is. And that's my favorite song, bro.
Dude, that was the most played song in the United Kingdom that year. Huge song.
Hey, I got it confused for a second with, I used to always confuse it with "You're Beautiful," but now I know James Blunt is a fucking madman, and I'll never confuse him with anything else ever again.
He's a very funny guy.
Right. Let's get into Ross. Will you stay for our demo hang?
Let's do it. Let's do it. Let's go.
Want to fucking drop into this shit, bro? We're gonna bring. I got to get some sound effects. We don't have them yet, but I want to have sound effects for my different segments, like ding, ding, ding. So first,
real quick, because I'm not sure if we're gonna be able to air this part on the And the Writer Is podcast. Let me just leave them the And the Writer Is people. When we do that, if you want to see what happens next, you can probably go onto YouTube and check out this. I don't know, do you guys hear this after the fact?
All the episodes are at youtube.com/nice.life. Nice, D-O-T, life.
Awesome. So you can check out what happens next on that. Thank you guys for listening. And exactly. And that was the party! Hey. Okay, now we're moving on to the next thing. Let's go!
Okay.
Thanks for listening to this episode of And the Writer Is. If you want to hear music from this songwriter I just interviewed, be sure to check out our Spotify playlist or visit our website at andthewriteris.com. If you like what we're doing, please subscribe to us. You can also like us on Facebook and Twitter. And the Writer is produced by Joe London, edited by Miles Bergsma, and published by Big Deal Music. A special thanks to David Silverstein from Mega House Music and Michael White. Until next time, this is Ross Golan.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey everyone, I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently, Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
When everyone's on the same page, getting things done at work is easy. Make a bigger impact at work with Grammarly. Grammarly is your secure AI writing partner that allows your team to make their point and move faster. You can even save time by going from spending hours editing drafts to just seconds. Join the 96% of Grammarly users that say it helps them craft more impactful writing. Sign up and download Grammarly for free at grammarly.com/podcast. That's grammarly.com/podcast. Easier said, done.